Iverson, the pinch runner at third. Morneau at second. Dickerson at first. Outfield shaded a little bit the opposite way for the left-handed batter. The 1-2 pitch to Wheeler. Ground ball up the middle and into center field for a base hit. Home comes Culberson. Home comes Morneau. And the game is tied at four. Ryan Wheeler with a two-run pinch hit single.
Hey, this is Ron Wotus, and you're listening to Giants Warm Up with Marty Lurie and Patrick Connor on KNBR 680.
Hey, welcome to Weekends in the Park out here at the Public House at Willie Mays Plaza. Marty Lurie, Patrick Connor, and that was the voice of the Rockies, our next guest who's out here with us, Jack Corrigan. A couple of Irishmen and Marty here.
Yeah, how about that?
Hey,
yeah.
That's pretty good, huh? Out here with the Giants fans. Glad to have you out here. Author and voice of the Rockies. What's going on, Jack?
Well, we always love to come to San Francisco. There is such energy in the ballpark. And our vantage point where the broadcast booths are here at AT&T, we're as close to the fans as any place in baseball. So you react to them as you're doing your work, and for those who just heard that little clip, you could say I got a little excited because we treasure every time that the Rockies can knock off the Giants.
Yeah, go ahead, Marty.
Yeah, Sergio Romo, I said on the show this morning when we started, I said, boy, I think the Rockies are in his head a little bit. Looks a little different against them as he does to other teams, and you brought up the point, Jack, that last year they couldn't touch him, but this year it's different.
He was very difficult on the Rockies last year, Marty, and really the last couple of years. And what I've seen in the two blown saves he's had against the Giants this year, a little change in the approach of the Rockies. I think every hit in his time on the mound in the ninth inning, it was a 1-2 or an 0-2 count. I mean, I think they're just trying to take the ball back up the middle, just try and go with where that pitch is, because it is the best slider in baseball when it's going well. But if you can be a little patient, you can have some success, and that's what the Rockies have done.
Boy, they did last night as well. Jack Corrigan is with us. The new book is coming out, and it is out, fans, and you'll be able to get it on Amazon and all the usual places. It's called Night of Destiny is what it's called. Before we get to that, you had a long history of broadcasting, of course, with the Rockies. How many years now with the Rockies?
This is my 12th season with the Rockies and my 29th in the big leagues.
And prior to that, the Cleveland Indians, right?
Yep.
Who were some of your partners in Cleveland?
Most of the time, my partner, we have former Oakland A at one time, just passed away, unfortunately. Mike Egan. Okay. Mike was, it was like going to baseball school every day with Mike. I mean, his dad was a great player. Sure. Mike played for a dozen years in the big leagues. His knowledge, his anticipation of things happening in the game, I couldn't have had a better mentor. And then the only other partner I had besides Mike was Joe Tate. And Joe is in the Basketball Hall of Fame, 40-plus years doing the Cleveland Cavaliers, but he was also a very good baseball announcer. So I was well-schooled in my formative years
business. Very nice.
Jack, tell us about the Cleveland sports fan, because there's been so much misery for so, so long, whether it's the Browns and the aforementioned Cavs and getting spurned by LeBron James and the poor Indians, who I know played the World Series in 97. But how has the Cleveland sports fan maintained their loyalty?
I think it's there's a little bit of a fatalist approach to it. They're going to be there through thick and thin, but in the back of their mind, they know they're going to be disappointed again, whether it's the drive with John Elway, the shot with Michael Jordan. I was in the tunnel in Florida in the ninth inning, the 10th inning, the 11th inning, and the 12th inning when they finally lost Game 7 to the Marlins. And that's kind of typical what happens, but the Cleveland fans stay after it. I would coach high school football in the offseason, and when we were in Cleveland 2 weeks ago, I got more questions about Brian Hoyer and Johnny Manziel because Brian was on the team the last year I coached there. So it was like, don't you want to talk baseball? No, we want to talk about Manziel and Hoyer. That's the way it goes in Cleveland.
Is Manziel going to be a Cleveland Brown, or is he going to be a Padre?
How about that? I'm not sure what the Padres were thinking there, but
he's already the most exciting guy in their entire system.
Well, that could be true. You're right about that, Patrick.
All right, Jack Corrigan with us. A pleasure to have you. What a great voice. And, Jack, the book is Night of Destiny. Set it up for us, because your dad was very special in your life, of course. but also in the life of America. And it's a great story, and you penned it for us.
Well, thank you, Marty. It was something typical of the guys of the Greatest Generation. Did not talk much about their World War II experience. And in the last year of his life, really when he knew it probably before the rest of us did, he finally opened up. The book is based on a letter he wrote to his mother that he never sent during this sinking of a troop ship on Christmas Eve in 1944. And he was on an ambulance squad and spent Christmas Eve and Christmas morning pulling victims and survivors out of the water. And as he started to tell the story, then the rest of his World War II experience, you know, in our business, we're storytellers, or we at least like to think we are, and I was intrigued by the idea of trying to tell his story. In his typical humble nature, he said, I don't want a biography. He says, if you're going to tell this story, make it a novel, have some fun with it. And so it evolved probably over a five-year process around the baseball work and everything else. But I think it's very reflective of the sacrifices all those people made for us to make this country what it still is today.
Boy, you made Fantastic. An interesting story. Of course, Pat is a veteran as well.
He was in the Marine Corps.
So. Yeah, great. So he can appreciate this. And I was an Army reservist.
That's right.
A cook, so I go that far. But you created a story that's very touching. And tell us sort of the basis of the story that's in the book. It's a very good story.
The book has three principal characters. There's a character based on Dad on the ambulance squad. There's a character that I created on the U-boat that sank the troop ship. And then the third principal character is one of the people on the boat. First half of the book sets all the background of how these guys got to that point on Christmas Eve of 1944. Then after the sinking, a set of circumstances allow these three principal characters to come together in the water in the harbor. And it was a tragic story because it was classified until 1990. The only reason more people finally found out about the sinking of the Leopoldville is Clive Cussler, the author and underwater explorer, found the wreckage off of Cherbourg, and that sort of forced the Defense Department to release documents about it.
Why would they hold that back?
They held it back at that particular time, Marty, because on Christmas Eve, the Germans still had the advantage. They were still moving westward in what became known as the Battle of the Bulge, and they were concerned about negative publicity, so they classified it at the time. And then, you know, with all the other things that happened post-war and then on to the Cold War and everything else, it just sat there forgotten except by the survivors and their families.
Well, so your dad obviously held this story. He just held it for years.
He held it for, well, till 2005. So, I mean, it was 60 years that he had held on to the story. And I have six brothers and sisters. We were flabbergasted when he finally started to talk about it.
Unbelievable. We have the voice of the Rockies, Jack Corrigan, with us, and storyteller. Now, you can, of course, get Night of Destiny at Amazon.com, but this is your second foray into publishing a book. Tell us about your first adventure.
The first book was Warning Track. It was about the can't-miss prospect that's missing, you know, just never quite had the career he wanted. And in the twilight of his time in the big leagues, in this fictional big leagues that I made, he has not only the season of his life, but one of the greatest in the history of the game. And it was at a time when supplements were the focus and everything else. And so he goes through this whole year of, is he or isn't he? And he's not saying anything about it and the process as it unfolds. And it was a lot of fun to write. It was easy to write because it was baseball. But that made writing Night of Destiny a little easier, and I've already got another one in the hopper.
Really? So, now, what's the focus of that one?
Wow. The next book is, I was a history major as an undergraduate, Marty.
Well, I can see that.
FDR, there was an attempted assassination of FDR in early 1933 before he'd even been inaugurated.
Really?
And in that attempt, Anton Cermak, the mayor of Chicago, was hit and died. The shooter was caught that day, indicted, tried, convicted, and executed in 53 days, which was, I mean, now that's unheard of.
Sure.
I had an uncle who was an FBI agent, and the sort of urban legend within the FBI all these years, still there, was that Cermak was the intended target and that it was a mob hit for an attempt by Cermak on Frank Nitti's life with kind of this goon squad that Cermak had. So I'm writing a book on the what if, you know, and kind of using my uncle as the FBI guy going through the process.
And
so it makes flights to wonderful cities like San Francisco and hotel rooms, the time passes a little better when you're working on a book.
Boy, A Night of Destiny. Jack Corrigan is the author. And, Jack, again, you can get it at all the usual outlets, Amazon.
Right now, just on Amazon, because Amazon was actually the publisher.
Okay.
And, you know, eventually we'll distribute it more than that, but they get an exclusivity period. Okay. So you can find it on Amazon.com. They can search my name or search the book title, and it'll pop up.
I'm looking forward to it.
Very fascinating,
really,
huh, Marty?
I'm looking forward to reading it. Seriously, it'll be fun.
You know, we baseball people, we have to have, you know, you got to be able to go the other way once in a while. You know, when
take
that guy throws that Romo slider, you got to take it to right field.
Take two and hit to right.
That's
the story of the Rockies.
Yeah.
Hey, Tulowitzki banged up a little bit. I see he's not in the lineup today. Do you have any information?
I talked to Troy a little bit this morning, feeling better. They're going to rest him today, obviously. They'll see about tomorrow. You know, he has stayed healthy this year. He always seems to have some little thing curtail what is one of the better careers of baseball history at short, you know, and we're a different team, the Rockies, when he's out there. So hopefully it's nothing too serious, but not playing today.
Yeah, Tulowitzki, an MVP candidate, went to my rival high school down in the South Bay, so I'd like to see him do well. Hey, you guys had a pretty interesting week, and I want to utilize the opportunity of what happened Thursday against the Braves to shed a little light on your skipper, Walt Weiss. But there was a dust-up with the Braves, huh? Give us a little background on that.
There, on Wednesday night, Josh Rutledge got hit in the head on an 0-2 pitch, and not much was, you know, this went on. And then in the eighth inning, foul ball by Corey Dickerson staggered Gerald Laird, the catcher. I mean, he had to be held up by the umpire. Two pitches later, on a follow-through swing, he hits Laird in the mask, and he goes down. He has to be taken out of the game. Well, they have a meeting on the mound and everything else, and then next pitch, Carpenter hits Dickerson, and from the Rockies' perspective, there was no doubt that that was intentional, even though what Corey had done was not. And Walt Weiss is one of those guys, he looks pretty stoic, but there's a cauldron bubbling right underneath the surface, and Walt went off a little bit.
Lost it, didn't he?
He did indeed, you know, and got ejected in a game that the Rockies were going to win. They were up big anyhow, but it was interesting to see, because at times people say, well, Walt needs to be more fiery, and I tell people there's plenty of fire there. He just is not going to demonstrate it to the public until he feels it's necessary, and on Thursday he felt it was necessary.
Wow, what a story.
Grabbed a bat in the dugout, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Oh, yeah.
He was as hot as I've seen him.
Pretty good. Bergman pitches today. Christian Bergman, you want to tell us just a little bit about him as we wrap it up?
Yeah, Christian's a youngster who has worked his way up through the organization and kind of felt like he was being overlooked along the way. He was a 24th round pick out of Cal Irvine, but always had good numbers, and the injuries we've had in our starting rotation gave Christian a chance. He's going to be Ryan Vogelsong. I mean, he's the same kind of pitcher. He throws strikes, all kinds of poise on the mound for a younger guy. Little chip on his shoulder that he felt like he had been ignored. He's not going to throw quite as hard as Ryan does, but he'll sit around 90, but he'll throw strikes. So Giants got to be ready.
Good game. Hey, Jack, a pleasure to have you on.
Loved the opportunity to visit with both you guys. Yeah. I look forward to doing it again sometime.
Great job. Yep. We'll look forward to the next book and get
all right.
John before that.
Heck
A Night
right.
of Destiny. Jack Corrigan. More coming up on the Sports Leader.